Hey everyone, before we get started, just to let you know, the audio at the beginning of the podcast gets a little rough. I got excited about starting to record over something James was saying, and so I come in a little hot on the mic, but it kind of clears up after that. So just bear with us and let's talk some Friday baseball.
A lot of my fans are also big fans of that show.
You're back in the DFSR here with our MLB podcast for Friday, September 8th. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James the I Davis.
And we're from DFSR.com, DFSR.com/NFL. We'll get you a free 3-day trial. No, excuse me, 7-day trial to our projection system. That's going to take you all the way through the first week of football. You can sign up now, and then it's just $29.95 a month after that. Covers you for all the sports that we cover, MLB, NFL, NBA, when the time comes, all under one subscription package. So go check that out. You got the tail end of James describing to me why...
Not back.
A nickname that was given to himself, but a nickname that he has called the Eye. So he was giving a lot of different reasoning. You caught the very tail end of it. Do you want to just sum up real quick why you call yourself the Eye?
Well, I refer to myself that just for the sake of clarity with people who just can only think of me that way. So I don't normally walk around, like, I don't introduce myself as the Eye to my neighbors when I walk around. But when it's specifically in the sports space, I just have this reputation of having an insane eye for when things are slightly off. And I just noticed something slightly off with one player in our projection system. And so I guess that's why.
No one beats his own drum when you...
I have to ask the people who came up with the nickname, because I don't know for sure. There could be a lot.
Once every 5 days, James catches something with the system, and then and no one screams it from the mountaintop higher. All right, let's get into a full Friday in baseball. Coming off of kind of a weird day with where we talked a lot about rostering Kluber and Kershaw together. Kershaw kind of had some issues early on in the game yesterday. He didn't really pay off, although it was one of those weird situations where kind of all the cheap bats got there too. So it was an interesting day of a short slate in baseball. Today we get all the games going. Got some interesting pitching stuff to kind of talk about here, but it's really led off by Scherzer. Scherzer is, I mean, he's going to be just overwhelming chalk here tonight, right? Like, we're getting to it. Like, Kluber last night was 90% start on FanDuel, 95% start on DraftKings. Makes kind of sense just because of the short slate. Are we going to see something along the lines of ownership percentages like that for Scherzer tonight?
I would think so. I mean, Scherzer is almost, like, better than Kluber, at least for fantasy purposes. He strikes out more guys. There's slightly more walks, but he also has been really dramatically depressing batting average on balls in play the last 2 years, and it starts to become one of these questions. So, you know, we talk about established baselines a lot, and, you know, like, an established baseline, especially in terms of batting average on balls in play, is oftentimes very relevant. But if you look at Scherzer over the last, four out of the last five seasons, he's had a BABIP under 270, right? And then he had the 1 year with the Tigers where he had a 315 BABIP. But do you think that Scherzer, like, at what point is he just good and not lucky when it comes to stats like that?
I mean, we're at 1,000 innings of it, right? Basically right now. We're at 1,000 innings of somewhere probably in the range of like a 2, if I had to guess, I'd say that's like 270 BABIP, maybe a little bit. Actually, I don't know. It's probably right around there.
I think it's better than that.
Yeah. Yeah, it might be. So let's say it's right around 270 for the last 1,000 innings. That's... You can't really ask for sample sizes like that in baseball, better ones like that. Like, that's pretty good. It just does seem like it's the norm. I mean, he has, you know, some of those things are his kind of issues. It seems to be like it's a home run or it's a strikeout, and, you know, the stuff that doesn't turn into a home run is just outs. Like, I don't know. I think I'm willing to believe it. I think that now 235 is probably even still too low. So if we wanted to put that 1,000 innings right around 270, we could still say he's running a little bit good this year. But still, it's not like he's a true 300 BABIP guy and he's just running on this insane luck. It's not the case. Yeah, he's going to be one of these low BABIP guys, I think. And it seems like that's just going to be the case going forward.
Well, yeah, he generates fly balls, and fly balls tend to lead to lower BABIP, especially if you don't allow hard fly balls, right? Like, he doesn't give up a ton of hard contact. And so, you know, it's something I hope that stats will clear up at some point in the not too distant future, where people quantify a fly ball, like a lazy fly ball to center field, at like a rocket to the warning track. Those aren't the same outcomes whatsoever, but given the way things stats are currently construed, you have hard hit percentage and stuff like that, but ground ball percentage and fly ball percentage, like, you know, your dribble over to third base is a ground ball, just like your rocket back up the middle, and likewise with fly balls. So, yeah, I think it's legit. I think he's actually something like a 260 BABIP guy, if I had to guess, as he sits in still the prime of his career at age 33. And that just means he's got not only a really high ceiling thanks to the strikeouts, but a pretty high floor as well. And then you tack on a terrific matchup with the Phillies today. bottom five team in terms of WOBA against righties, one of the top five teams in terms of striking out against them. And it's impossible to imagine that anyone else will be greater than 20% start on FanDuel tonight.
Yeah, no, he's only 11-6, which is right around the same area that Kluber was in last night. I think that you just, there's a few other bigger names going here tonight that makes it, I guess, maybe a chance that the ownership comes down a little bit, especially if you're just kind of hedging away some of your cash gains. I just don't think that, from our purposes, it really makes sense at all to do it. He's just an overwhelming favorite there. You know, we can talk about some GBP pivots, and there are plenty here for FanDuel. I'm wondering, though, about starting pitcher two. We have Darvish going here. Darvish is kind of expensive. Decent matchup. Colorado got to Kershaw a little bit last night, but do you see Darvish as, like, so last night we were in a situation where we wanted to pair. I mean, it was kind of close, but we ended up pairing those two big guys together. Could you see that same kind of thing happening here with Scherzer and Darvish?
I think I could. Actually, tonight's slate reminds me of last night's slate in that there aren't actually a lot of big games with huge totals or great players in great positions here. Darvish a little speculative to me. I mean, you know, he missed a start in August. He's come back in his last two starts and been pretty lousy. So it's hard to say if there might be something more going on with him. The pitch counts, he's only touched 100 pitches once since July 21st, thanks to those injury issues again. So I don't know if he's as safe as I would like him to be, even compared to Kershaw, say, who is still, you know, warming back up after a DL stint. Darvish is good. Yeah, I mean, Darvish is excellent. There's no question about it. Colorado stinks when you take him outside of Coors, and LA is a very forgiving pitcher's park. So I don't mind it by any stretch, but if I'm just like making a lineup on DraftKings, it's hard to imagine I would want to make any big sacrifices to get him in there. Although I will say there aren't really a lot of, like I mentioned, big time stacks. So if it does shake out that way, I wouldn't be, I guess, disappointed either.
Yeah, I think the only thing I'd be worried about is just like the pitch count thing, right? He only went three innings last game. He was getting beat up a little bit, but not to the point where you would kind of pull him after three innings. Dodgers have been so careful with their pitchers this year. I think that would be the only thing that would keep me away from his price. That they're just not in a, like, the Dodgers at this point are not in, they're not in win mode, right? They're in maintenance mode just to get to the playoffs. And they brought over Darvish specifically for the playoffs, not to really just kind of like battle out some regular season game against the Rockies right now in, early September. So I think that's my concern. It's actually might be my concern with just all Dodgers pitchers going forward. It's already been a concern with them during the course of the season. I think it's actually, the concern might even be ramped up now because they've been pretty smart. Their playoff seeding is basically, I think, set. And why just tax these guys before the playoffs? I think that'd be the only reason I might avoid paying all the way up for him. If we don't play him, some of these other guys, I can talk myself into a lot of these guys. Is there a starting pitcher two here that's kind of stands out to you? I have a group of about four that I've kind of clustered together.
Yeah, I think there's a couple guys you can consider. Right now, the system is leaning in the direction of Marcus Stroman. Stroman has a very nice money line tonight against Buck Farmer. And, you know, I'd like to talk to you about that as well. But going up against the Tigers, you know, in the absence of JD Martinez, they're not quite the same offensive team they were earlier this season. You know, the Tigers can still hit a little bit. So I don't think it's like, you know, one of these tremendous matchups or anything. But yeah, they've been still a bottom 10 team in the league in terms of WOBA against righties. But he's getting a really heavy money line here, I assume based on the fact that he's going up against Buck Farmer, who's got a 7.18 ERA this season. But that ERA is like not grounded in reality from where I'm sitting. Like he's got a 4.5 XFIP. He had a 3.3 XFIP last year.
You're talking about Farmer here?
This is Buck Farmer. Like, yeah. I think the public perception of Farmer is that he's a lot worse than he really is. And so I'm not sure if you want to just bank on the negative 217 line being super accurate. I could imagine that actually getting bet in the other direction. But all things considered, Stroman's still a very solid option here. Just in the classic, like 7.5 Ks per nine, kind of not super awesome pitcher two slot on DraftKings.
Yeah, he can go long in the games, and that helps him because the ground ball rate is pretty elite, and so that kind of makes up for some of his strikeout issues. I think it's a two-pronged thing. I think it's a matchup with Farmer. I think it's also, you know, this Detroit team, you know, Miggy's still suspended. They traded away JD Martinez. That lineup is really pretty damn bad. Like, they, you know, Kinsler is fine, but then, you know, their projected lineup is Alex Presley. No thanks. Castellanos is fine. And then it's like Hicks, Candelario, and the list kind of just even gets worse from there. So I think it's just the Tigers lineup at this point. They're basically fielding half of a AAA squad. With Miggy suspended, and Miggy actually had been struggling too this year. I think it's those two things combined. So I think it's partly the matchup with Farmer, but partly just what he's going to be up against in terms of the Tigers overall. They're all righty bats. That's a better split for Stroman anyway. So I think it kind of all lines up. I always get worried about guys like this because when your whole game is going deep into games, like from a fantasy perspective, there's just ways that can go bad for you, right? Like you like to be able to mix in. Enough Ks. I kind of put that threshold right around 8 Ks per 9 in terms of just being able to rack up a few more points. So I don't know if that's his projection right now is clearly being driven by the matchup and the money line. I'm just a little worried about the Ks.
Yeah, I am too, for sure. I also think, you know, he's got a high BABIP. That's going to happen for high ground ball pitchers. I'm also concerned that he left his last start early with this little elbow issue. And, you know, he's still taking the mound here, but there's enough concerns there too where it might wind up being that we ding down his innings projection a little bit, and that takes him out of the picture. Moving past Stroman, some other guys that I'm looking at here. What do you think of Patrick Corbin? So Corbin, you know, he's up against San Diego today. It's at Arizona, so you don't prefer that, but he's actually been kind of a bounce back guy. You know, he had a pretty rough start to this season. He's kind of the anti-Scherzer in that he's always been an incredibly high BABIP guy, like 327, 322, 329 each of the last 3 years. And that might be something like his true talent, but he does strike out enough guys to where, you know, he can kind of keep things under control. He's still coming fairly cheap on DraftKings. What do you think about him as a pivot away from Stroman if you're concerned about his elbow?
Well, he's the guy that you noticed and called yourself the eye about because our projection had been a little low. I think at some point we had maybe adjusted his projection a little bit and it never kind of reverted back. And you caught it, buddy, and then you just went on for a 5-minute diatribe about why you were the eye for catching that. But he's been good. This is his best season so far in the majors, probably, I think. I mean, well, it's close. I guess 2015 he was pretty good too. But yeah, the strikeouts I think are probably a little higher than we can probably expect from him. He's probably like a little less than 8.5 Ks per 9. I'm glad that he's getting the walks down a little bit. That was his huge issue last year. He was just walking the ballpark. It's not really happening. Yeah, I mean, San Diego has the least amount of runs scored in the majors this year. They're not good. They're better. I prefer them against righties. Some of their bats in the middle of that lineup actually are they can do damage to lefties. I mean, damage relative to
Padres last place in the majors in terms of WOBA against lefties. By the way,
They're probably last place in WOBA against righties too, right? I mean, it's got to be real close.
Sure. They're also the second highest in the majors in K-ing in terms of lefties. They're awful against lefties.
Oh no, I was only comparing them to themselves. I suspect the Padres would rather face lefty pitchers. that's all.
WOBA lower against lefties than righties.
All right. Well, these stupid stats, you nerd. I mean,
I'm sorry. Sorry with the stats. No, totally. Yeah, good call.
How about some I just
of them,
keep
they would really prefer it. When they asked him in the locker room, they said, I want to face a righty, so I believe them rather than WOBA difference.
I think I'd rather just go on with this baseless claim than hear your nerdy stats because nobody wants to hear it. And
they don't call you the eye, dude. That's why I'm the eye.
I think on DraftKings, he actually checks all the boxes for what we're looking for, and he's a little more expensive than Stroman, so he's 1,400 more. Now you need to decide is the matchup and kind of what he can bring in the K arena good enough. His money line's pretty good too, because again, the Padres stink. Actually, his money line's actually even higher than Stroman. So I think if I were to choose between the two guys, I'd probably take the matchup in the Ks on the Corbin side, and then probably just say I'm willing to pay the extra $1,400 extra on FanDuel on DraftKings is kind of a lot. Like that's just not a number you can throw away. So that would be my only little concern there. But yeah, no, overall I think I prefer him, and I do think that like we're probably seeing a return to Corbin. I mean, last year it was a return from injury, and so you can maybe kind of say like this, or I think it was actually got hurt midseason. So I think you can maybe say last year's outlier as compared to what he had done the year before is probably injury based, and then like you said, the matchup against the Padres is about as good as it gets. I mean, the guy I had here that I'm wondering your thoughts on is Luke Weaver. See, Weaver and Corbin to me are the guys these are the guys we want to pay up for a little bit more, just because of the strikeout stuff. And actually, Weaver's only 300 more than Stroman. So, like your thoughts there. He's been excellent since coming basically out of the bullpen. Is he a reasonable pivot? Not like Stroman's like locked in for anything here, but would he maybe constitute some greater upside and maybe even some safety in around the same price range?
Yeah, it looks like it. I mean, you know, it's always tough with these guys who transition in from the bullpen because you never quite know when it's legit. But I mean, three starts with 10 strikeouts, 10 strikeouts, and 9 strikeouts in admittedly really, really good matchups. Like San Diego and Milwaukee are arguably the two best matchups for right-handed pitchers. And at San Francisco is no bad matchup either. So, you know, as he transitions and pitches against the Pirates today, you want to give some pause. But turns out the Pirates are a great matchup too. Like they're the fourth lowest team in terms of WOBA against right-handed pitching. And so while they don't strike out as much, they might give him a slightly higher floor than some of these other options would. So, yeah, I think I like him here. I mean, he pitched against the Pirates once this season. It was out of the bullpen, so it doesn't really mean much. But, you know, he didn't allow any runs over two innings. I think you probably could throw that out the window. But if you're just looking for a cheap option on DraftKings and some... there are a lot of question marks among these other names that we've thrown out there, particularly Stroman and Darvish. So if you want to kind of alleviate yourself some question marks, save up on Corbin and pay down for Weaver. In my mind, Weaver and Corbin are a similar talent level, and it's really only the matchup that would sway me towards Corbin, but Weaver probably has higher upside, so I do think he's a great option there.
Yeah, 29 Ks in those last three games. That's awesome. You really don't see numbers better than that, considering...
That's 29 Ks, 10, 10, 9. Yeah, yeah, good call. That is a lot. That's really good.
Are you making fun of him because you said that? Sorry, I'm just looking up some other stats on him. he probably ends up, he's another guy too that we'll probably have to look at his projection because we're not nearly, I'm not going to slot him in for, you know, be a 12K per nine guy or whatever he's been doing in the short term. But
yeah, that makes
there
sense.
Is some sense, there's a likelihood that we could maybe work on his projection just a little bit to make sure that these Ks could be kind of the real thing. And this Pirates lineup, this is another one. We get late in the season. Some of these teams, you know, have kind of, guys are hurt. Teams have kind of just packed it in. You know, they're bringing up young guys. The bottom of this Pirates lineup right now, Jordan Luplow, Elias Diaz, Jordy Mercer. I mean, those guys are nearly auto outs. And in the top of the lineup, even like in Max Maroff and guys like this aren't much better. They still have Marte and McCutcheon there, but I'm not so worried about it. So this lineup, they've gotten dramatically worse over the course of the season with through injury. And we need to, you kind of need to make adjustments for some of these pitchers for the team that they're actually facing now as compared to the rest of the season. If the Pirates had already been bad, I mean, if they've already been bad versus righties throughout the course of the year, there's no reason to think that this lineup is going to improve on whatever they've been doing. After those, I mean, we have a real name, Archer's pitching. I don't know if we want to face him against Boston. Jimmy Nelson's been good this year against the Cubs. It's probably just matchup concerns with those guys. Pomerantz possibly in a strikeout happy Tampa Bay team, although that's in Boston, and I don't think I want to go there. Clevinger, there's a lot of decent pitchers today. Clevinger's going today. Tanaka, I think the matchups on these guys are just the things that say.
I think you can consider Pomerantz. I mean, the Rays striking out the second highest rate against left-handed pitching, bottom five teams in terms of WBA. That actually is a great matchup. You know, lefties can struggle in Boston, and he doesn't have the money line that you'd hope for because he's up against Archer. But in terms of a big tournament guy, or even just, looking at this, especially all the fantasy points he's generated off of what amount to lucky wins, obviously, and the low ERA, I bet you see a lot of ownership for him on DraftKings, actually. And, you know, if he showed up in our lineups, I don't think I would be devastated either.
Yeah, coming cheaper than basically all the other guys that we talked about up until this point. All right, hit us up with a sponsor, then we'll get into some stacks.
Yeah, let's talk about FantasyFactor.com. The football season's right around the corner. Fantasy Factor is a great place to play daily fantasy football for people who don't like to play against sharks putting in hundreds and hundreds of lineups in every single contest, like you, Doug, your VIP over at DraftKings, you traveling all the way to Boston with your very best friend in the whole world to watch stuff. But what was I talking about? FantasyFactor.com. Yeah, but they're great. I really do like Fantasy Factor. A lot of our users have had a lot of success there playing against casual players, you know, playing $5 to $50 per slate. It's a great spot for that. Fantasy Factor is also cool heading into this football season because they have a couple big-time free rolls. There's $1,000, I think it's a Survivor contest, yep, heading throughout the season. And then they do $100 free rolls every week. Great way to get started on a bankroll without making a deposit. So check them out, fantasyfactor.com, and hope to see you over there.
Yeah, no, you mentioned us going up to Boston this week for the DraftKings kickoff party, which will be a good time. We'll talk about that over on our football podcast, which will be going up today. Ooh. So go check that out, the DFSR NFL podcast. We'll talk about this Sunday's games and then us partying and watching the games together, like the best friend that you are, buddy. All right, let's talk some stacks here for the evening. We mentioned so many good pitchers that, I mean, I would say like almost half the games at least, or half the pitchers in the slate, I would say are average, well above average, or like well beyond that. That always makes for It always makes for some difficult stacking. It always also just kind of concentrates some of the obvious plays and teams in our lineups a little bit. Is there a team that jumps out to you as being like just a clear favorite here tonight?
Well, no, actually, I'm kind of trying to figure out who the exact stack is going to be. There's a lot of just kind of medium to not so good pitchers, but not really any ones that jump out as like slam dunk terrible guys to me. I mean, so like you could take both sides of, say, the Cincinnati-New York game, and we talked about this the other day. Neither Amir Garrett nor Seth Lugo are very good pitchers, but Cincinnati and the Mets aren't very good hitters either. You know, for all of the terrible pitchers that went yesterday with Harvey and Mail, they only scored 9 total runs, and Cincinnati only put together 2 runs against the Mets there. So I do like both sides of that game, however, especially for big tournaments. Both Lugo and Garrett have big-time blow-up potential, but it's not exactly, you know, again, the lineups aren't really top-heavy enough, and they don't really support enough for you to just go whole hog and stack off the whole team, you know?
Yeah, I do think you see the Diamondbacks is pretty higher ownership tonight. They have a pretty high run line. They're up over 5. They're right 5.75 implied runs right now. I think that's the highest of the slate. If we're just looking there in terms of just like overall just upside and runs, guys like Peralta still coming. I mean, he's coming in that mid tier. Jake Lamb only 3,000. He's going to be chalk on FanDuel. 3,000 for him. I suspect he probably has the highest ownership of any third baseman at least, and probably, man, he's a little bit more expensive on DraftKings, so maybe it's not as crystal clear there. But I think you see those guys as pretty highly owned. Yeah, 4,600 on DraftKings. I think you see those guys as high owned. We prefer Goldschmidt in a lefty matchup, so Lyles isn't that. And again, it's always, you know, the Diamondbacks are one of these teams. They're maddening because their lineup just kind of switches around. They throw bad hitters ahead of the good hitters, but then that usually gives us value because those bad hitters are usually cheap. So while I complain about the Diamondbacks' like ability to actually make logical,
you love them.
Well, I love them from a DFS standpoint for this reason. I do love them from this point because when they just hit like the Daniel Descalzos and Kettle Martes of the world, like sandwiched in between, you know, Peralta, Glam, and Goldschmidt, then that does make for great value. So on that note, they're good. So for instance, like they do that and they give you pretty good value, and I think that they're probably going to be the most popular team, at least for cash games. There's like the most players from that team will be in cash games. But then you get like teams like the Indians, who they're also in a good spot here, but they just don't do that. Like they kind of just they stay pretty static with their lineup. Their guys are all pretty good, and then the prices, you know, Lindor's over 4,000, Jose Ramirez is 4,000, and E5 is 4,000. So like these guys are all just almost getting too expensive. So when you roster Scherzer,
they might be worth it against a bucket baller like Miley. Like 5 walks per 9 out of Miley, can't keep the ball on the ground really. Like I really like that matchup for the Indians, even though they are expensive.
Yeah, and they have some lefty righty matchup guys that I prefer. Like Yandy Diaz is still coming cheap, even if he hits like in the 6 hole. That's kind of cutting it close for where I want to have players in cash games. Though when nights you have Scherzer on the mound, you kind of do need to take a look at some of these cheaper guys. So he's only 2,300. Brandon Guyer 2,500. Again, 6 and 7 in the lineup is around the cutoff point for cash games in terms of your plate appearance expectation. But this strikes me as one of those matchups that worth it. I can see. So for my safety kind of perspective, I'm going to be leaning Diamondbacks and Indians, at least for cash. Any other teams before we get out of here?
Yeah, sure. I think the Yankees, they fall into the expensive but great matchup category as well today. They go up against Martin Perez, who's just been one of the very worst pitchers in the majors this season. Perez, you know, just under 6 Ks per 9, 3 walks per 9, but a big-time fly ball rate, and just giving up an incredible amount of hard contact. So, 4.66 ERA, or 4.87 ERA, 4.66 xFIP, following up of last year's high 4s xFIP. Bringing that junk against the Yankees shouldn't take them too far. But again, you know, given that they've had good success and good lineup stability, you're not really getting away with too much price-wise, unless you could, you know, maybe get like a Tyler Austin or, you know, just somebody who's bats a little high in the lineup that you don't expect. So worth keeping an eye on there, but it might wind up being too expensive for you to really go all in for cash game purposes.
Gary Sanchez is back from his suspension tonight. I can see him being a pretty popular play. He's 3,600, but he's one of those guys that, like, catcher position is such a weak position that at times it just makes sense to pay up for a guy who's so clearly above the rest of the group, and Sanchez qualifies as that. I mean, offensively, he's just so far beyond everybody else. So even at 3,600 for him on FanDuel, I like that price. I'll see myself.
Yeah, excellent lefty and righty spot.
Yeah, I can see myself just playing that even with Scherzer. Like, that'd be a place I'm just happy to spend because, these matchups are just, the rest of the catcher player pool is just pretty garbage. All right, we're going to get out of here, go do our football podcast, DFSR/NFL. We'll get you that free 7-day trial to the projection system powered by Lineup Lab. That's Optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings, NFL, NBA, NFL, MLB, NBA when the time comes. Free for 7 days, and there's $29.95 a month after that. Buddy, enjoy your weekend hanging out with me in Boston, and I'll see you over on the Football Podcast in a second.
Just can't wait to see you there, Doug.